When I think about why somebody wouldn't do this or why I sometimes hesitate to take radical steps to improve my financial livelihood, fear is the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm afraid of the rejection, which, you know, if you take like this meta approach, could be looked at as afraid of competition because ultimately I'm afraid that somebody else will get what I want. But I think there's also this deeper, more internalized fear that a lot of people struggle with. And that's the fear of like outshining or leaving behind the people that they rock with, you know? Like you said earlier, in a lot of our minds, competition is a zero-sum game, meaning if I win, then I inherently took something from someone else, or that it's comparative in the sense that other people will think I'm better than another person because I got this thing and they didn't.
Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Julian.
And I'm Kirsten. Today we're talking about whether competitive people make more money.
All right. This is your jam.
I know. And I feel like I can see our listeners just kind of rolling their eyes like, here they go with another chicken or the egg question. You know, one of the reviews about our podcast said that listening to us was like sitting at the table with their cousins. And I felt that because this is the kind of question that you would hear and it would absolutely come up at a reunion.
Yes.
So indebted Lady Doc on fire. If you're listening, this episode is for you. This is about to be some cousin talk.
I love it. We get comments like that often, actually. So huge shout out. I'll throw another one out there. Huge shout out to our expat community. We actually have quite a few people who are listening abroad. So Nicole, the soulful expat in particular, she calls us her Insta cousins.
Hey, and we are
actually connected. She is somehow connected to one of my earliest best friends that I grew up with in Brooklyn.
Oh.
Yeah. And I'm honest, like when I look at her, I see my sister, like my actual sister. Like,
aww.
It's really, really weird. But anyway, we are connected to all of our listeners, but those two in particular, thank you for the shout out. I also want to say if I am sounding a little funny or stuffy, it's because I am very congested right now. So I'm trying my best to breathe and host this podcast. So hopefully our producer and the team can add like a decongestant effect or something like that. That makes me sound a little bit more normal. Anyway, I'm going to get back to this question about competitiveness. You are obviously a very competitive person. That's not to say that I'm not competitive, but you kind of wear it on your sleeve.
Yes.
I agree. This is an interesting question, and I've got some pretty strong opinions about it. So I'm looking forward to diving in.
Yes, hot take soon come. So aside from being competitive, I think my interest in this topic really started from an observation that was made in a book called The Startup of You.
Okay.
And this book came out in 2012, so it was pre-pandemic. And it's all about surviving and thriving in a fiercely competitive economy. And so it's written by Reid Hoffman and Ben Kaznosha. I think that's how you pronounce his last name. But anyway, Reid was the CEO of LinkedIn at the time. I think he's now like on the he's chairman of the board. He's promoted himself. But anyway, in the book, they said this quote, and it goes, searching for a job only when you're unemployed or unhappy at work has been replaced by the mandate to always be generating opportunities. Hmm. The moment you begin to take success for granted is the moment a competitor lunges for your jugular.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bold words.
Right. So they go on to say things like, only the paranoid survive. And I'm obviously like cherry picking very sensationalized sentences, but the book is very good. And I just think there's something to that. Maybe not as violent as they describe, but the world is far faster and way more competitive than anything our parents or our mentors experienced. And, you know, I just want to get your feelings on, what does it mean to take success for granted? Should people always look to generate opportunities, or is it okay to just settle into the jobs that they have?
Yeah, so I have a lot of thoughts on this. First, I think it's a bit extreme, but I can totally relate to the sentiment. Reflecting back on my corporate career and even my life as an entrepreneur, but secondly, I would say yes. Many people in general, and I'm making blanket statements here. I feel like I'm just going to say that one time, so I don't have to like preface every statement.
Giving a disclaimer.
We're going to make a lot of blanket statements
here. Yes, there are a lot of blanket statements.
But yes, I would agree. I think a lot of people take success for granted. We've seen it play out time and time again in business and sports and even in relationships. The first thought that came to mind, and this is top of mind because I've been watching a lot of throwback basketball now that the season is over. But I'm reflecting back on the relationship between the late, great Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal when they were playing together in Los Angeles. And basically, when Kobe came to the league, he was a young, brash, and hungry rookie.
Yes.
He was
arrogant.
Literally 17 years old when he signed the contract. His parents had to co-sign the contract just for him to accept it. That's just how young he was.
Mm-hmm.
He was eventually 18 when the season started, but he went on to become the youngest to ever play, or the youngest player to ever play in the league. And to your point, he was labeled as arrogant from the very beginning. Obviously, he worked really, really hard, and he's known for his insane
work ethic.
What they call it, Mamba mentality.
Yes.
And so he obviously has something to prove. Now, at the same time, you had someone like Shaq, who was already on that team, who was the strongest, fastest big man the game has ever seen. He was a true phenomenon, a dominant force. And it didn't take much for him to dominate the game. So naturally, he didn't work out or work in general nearly as hard as Kobe did. And so whether that's right or wrong, I think is besides the point. But I think most people can agree that there's an appreciation for both of those approaches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kobe made basketball his life. Like, that's very clear. But that was to the detriment of everything else. And it had a negative impact on his life. Whereas Shaq had fun, but didn't win nearly as many championships as he probably could have if he had dedicated himself to the game like Kobe did. So, you know, even when I think about myself, there are times where I can relate to both approaches. I think overall, your sense of competitiveness has a tendency to evolve over time as your life kind of changes.
Yeah, your mom was actually telling me, I don't watch tennis, but she was telling me about this year's U.S. Open.
Mm-hmm.
And she was saying that both of the competitors in the women's final were teenagers.
They
were an unseeded teenagers. I think they're 18 and 19. That's not related to Kobe. But when you said 18, I was like, oh, that's the same thing your mom was telling me about.
Yeah.
Teenagers coming in, changing up the game.
Yeah.
But it does make sense that we would naturally leap to sports when we're talking about competition, because it's one of those words that people only tend to associate with like athletes.
Yes.
And arrogant people, like, or where there's like a clear winner, like in games, but it's not something that people tend to identify with themselves comfortably.
Yeah, competitiveness is definitely a descriptor used with athletes often, but I think it's also very common in business. You were talking about Reid Hoffman and entrepreneurs. And I think I could make the case for like legendary business people and even politicians as being very competitive and draw this correlation between that or them and the success that they've achieved. But I think there's also a connotation or feel to the word competitive that turns people off.
Mm-hmm.
It makes people think like ruthless and like winning by all means and doing whatever it takes, even if that means like cheating or, you know, any of those things. And that association plays a role in why so many people make a deliberate choice to not be competitive or even be considered competitive. And as a result, they end up missing out on opportunities that could have been theirs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you and I have spoken about this privately, but, you know, shared here and try to be as politically correct as possible.
Lord.
And among our entrepreneurial circles, and to an extent, even our friends who are corporate professionals, there's a subsegment of people, I think, who cloak their fear of truly going for it under the guise of collaboration, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to stand out or, you know,
let's do it together.
Cause someone to miss out on something, and you know, we can all eat and all of these little things that we say that is sort of like, they call it collaboration, but it's almost like anti-competitiveness.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I want to unpack that later in the episode.
Yeah, but like they shun people who are competitive and they take offense to the success that they've achieved because they perceive it as a slight or an attack against like the group.
Yeah.
And it's a constant struggle between those who consider themselves go-getters and those who think those people are like way too aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
But listen, in my experience, I'm just being honest. The go-getters win.
Mm.
Like, they win. And they're the ones who get the raises, the promotions, the big contracts, and acclaim more often than not. And there's definitely something to the sense of competitiveness and, like, the impact that that can have on your financial life.
Yeah, which brings us back to the original question, which is, do competitive people make more money? And my answer is, drumroll please, yes and no.
That's
maybe.
Okay.
Sometimes.
I need you to make
it
up your
depends.
mind.
Well, let me state my case for yes first.
Okay.
Yes, they make more money because, one, in any field, there's a limited number of positions and they're generally willing to take more risks to get to the top. And then on top of that, I think competitive people have different levels of stamina and resilience. And sometimes it's just rooted in their desire to win. And other times it's rooted in their desire to compete and just improve in that process.
Okay. I agree with that. I would add, yes, and I would add that competitive people understand that there will be collateral damage. And yes. Even as I say that, it sort of makes me envision the descriptors that I was talking about, this mm-hmm. ruthlessness, mm-hmm. right? And this could also be because I've been rewatching House of Cards. And so
yes, you've been watching violent television
quite a bit while you've tried Frank to heal. Underwood. in my mind here. But I think that hyper-competitive people understand that there will be collateral damage and that there are no big wins without some type of cost incurred. And that cost could come in the form of healthy habits, or there could be a financial cost or social capital, whatever it is. But non-competitive people, more often than not, I believe, are typically unwilling to risk those things. Mm-hmm. And as a result, they just aren't rewarded nearly as often or to the same degree mm-hmm. as those who are sort of willing to pay the cost to be the boss.
Oh, Sookie now. You know, even though there are several industries that are struggling with labor shortages, everyone is still talking about how competitive the labor market itself still is. And so I looked up some stats around how many applications it takes to get a job. And there was this article from 2020, so it's a little dated, but it says that recent stats show that it takes 1 to 200 applications to receive one job offer, okay. which is wild. So in a further breakdown, they mentioned that you have an 8.3% chance of getting a job interview from a single job application, which means that it takes 10 to 20 applications to get one interview and 10 to 15 interviews to get one offer. So just that stamina alone for people to not give up on application number 56,
yeah.
knowing that you have to do 1 to 200 of them to actually land the gig, is something that I think competitive people have innately. Not only that, but their competitiveness makes them choose to apply to jobs that make more money.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that. I actually would have thought that those numbers would have been higher.
Really?
Yeah. They might be now. Probably. I'm remembering, you're right. That was a 2020 article. I'm willing to bet those numbers are significantly higher. And I'm saying that from personal experience. I remember days where we'd be hiring for a role back in my corporate life, and internally, there'd be just internally, there were 50 internal applicants, and within the first week, there'd be like another 100 people who've applied for that one job. So we're just talking about 1 week, and that's not even including some of the people who maybe hadn't submitted their application yet. And so you could argue that mm-hmm. we were at 200 just within the first week. I would also say, though, since you mentioned that article was sort of giving average figures, that it is likely higher in markets where you've got a tougher market or a larger market, mm-hmm. more companies, it's probably more people and more competitive. I'm not surprised by that at all. This is also making me be a bit empathetic, because I remember, you know, what that process looked like, or felt like, rather, mm-hmm. when you're applying for a job and you just feel like it was
the one
made for you. Yes. Like, oh my gosh, this, like, you're definitely going to get an interview. I mean, at a minimum, you'll get an interview.
They're literally describing my job history.
They're describing me. Like, right. This is me.
Yeah.
It's like an actor, you know, that like gets a script and is like, oh my gosh, this was written for me. And I'm not making light of the situation, because obviously when you're looking for a job,
oh man,
you really, really want it, but it can be painful. It can be mm-hmm. heartbreaking when you don't even get a call back.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And you just feel like maybe
you start to doubt.
Of course you do. I think mm-hmm. it's a natural sort of feeling. So, yeah, hopefully that data helps to, soften the blow a little bit and make you realize that maybe it's not you. I'll also add that the people who are more competitive probably interview very differently, which would or could work for or against them. But my guess is in a crowded field, they're more memorable and certainly going to stand out more compared to someone who is probably a bit more passive.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, again, from experience, you've had those back-to-back conversations. And before you know it, you don't remember where the day went, but you've interviewed six candidates. Mm-hmm. The people that are probably a little bit more colorful and aggressive, dare I say competitive, are going to be the ones that stand out to you. Mm-hmm. Questions. Since you self-identify as being competitive, are there situations where being competitive could actually lead you to making less money, do you think?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And I think you've alluded to them a couple times in the episode, but there are people who possess this Hunger Games level of competitiveness and leave a bunch of bodies in the wake when they're done. And it's just like they put a little too much dip on the chip.
Yeah, they get branded.
Yeah, and that's not how you make friends. That can do more harm than good, because I think social capital is one of those things in modern workplaces that they're looking for. You know, they want to know, who do you know that can help you be successful here? Even when we were writing our book proposal, the format was basically like, who are you? What is the book about? And who do you know that can help you promote and sell
it?
Like, people are looking for people who know how to make friends and keep them. And I think the second reason they could make less money is because sometimes they're so caught up in the winning that they lose focus and they make mistakes, like easy mistakes. So they can get so fixated on keeping up with the Joneses that they lose sight of what they already have and end up taking on a riskier investment strategy or just blowing a bunch of money. And, you know, that could result in losing a bunch very, very fast.
I think we're thinking of the same person, but go ahead.
But I'm going to throw it back at you, because you've talked about how competitiveness, the trait, kind of helps people with more raises and promotions, et cetera. But I'm not sure you've actually answered the question, which is, do competitive people like me make more money?
If I had to say, I would say they do. Yes, for no other reason than because they tend to overcome rejection more.
Yeah.
And so more attempts, more shots leads to more points. Like, you're not going to make them all.
It reminds me of that Shaq gif where he's just like blocking away all the negativity.
Yeah, no, I mean, you get rejected or you miss a shot.
It's like, I don't sit and sulk problem.
About it. Exactly. I'm on to the next one, on to the next one. Before you knew it, you've submitted 500 applications. Mm-hmm. You've got 10, you know, interviews scheduled. You've got 3 offers on your table. Mm-hmm. And now you can go back to a hiring manager and say, hey, I want to work here, except I've got two other options.
Yeah.
Right. And so, yes, I would say, if for no other reason, I think those hyper competitive people do eventually end up earning more money, because naturally, if they can sort of swallow that rejection and keep it moving, they end up more often than not having a little bit more negotiation power with their hiring managers. But I think there are other ways to look at this. For people who don't identify as being competitive, the question they need to ask themselves is, how much is your fear of competing or losing costing you? Mm. Or how much more could you possibly be earning if you overcame your fear of rejection or cared less about the perceived optics, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could ask, how much is your fear of competing in different talent pools costing you? Or what effect is your commitment to this singular career path or claimed identity having on your income potential? It's not like there's an energy drink people can take to be more competitive. It's like, all right, I'm feeling, you know, a little slow today. Let me sort of drink this competitive
juice.
Or if people can, like, get some blood drawn out of them if they're, like, too competitive. It's like, all right, let me
bring down the levels.
Calm down a little bit.
I was going to make a drug joke, but
you're probably not.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
I don't think we need that. But that sense of competition is rooted in their identity more often than not. And so you have to, like, dig into that to be to better understand the why behind it.
Yes. I love how you reframe that question a couple of ways.
It's a great husband skill. I'm not going to answer the question, but
I'm going to ask a different
other
question
ways to think about this.
But it's great because they all provoke different discussions instead of a reaction like my question did, which is kind of like, forces you into it, yes or no, but it's very like,
yeah, don't force
provocative.
Me. Don't force me.
Yours is far more thoughtful. And, you know, my first thought is that it reminded me of this fascinating article that I read in the Wall Street Journal not too long ago called "These People Who Work From Home Have a Secret. They Have Two Jobs." And it's all about people who have taken advantage of remote working and thought, why be good at one job when I can just be mediocre at two?
Love it.
So basically, as long as the companies aren't competitors, pun intended, this is a perfectly legal strategy to basically double your salary.
Mm-hmm.
And while I wouldn't necessarily like default to labeling the people who do this as competitive, they definitely embody the traits of a competitive person. They saw an opportunity to win and then they went for it.
I am so in love with this recent phenomenon. Like this is, I'll be honest, that would have never crossed my mind. If I were still working like a traditional job, I don't think that would have ever crossed my mind. And that's not to say that because I'm not competitive, it's because I would have just used that free time to do essentially what I'm doing now, is to build an entrepreneurial endeavor or dabble back into real estate or something like that. But I think most people, particularly those who aren't as competitive, wouldn't even dream to do something like that because
it's just not in their nature.
Yeah. There was a recent article in CNBC that stated that 65% of workers are looking for a new job as of August. And the number one reason is negotiating for a better salary, followed by expanded benefits and more workplace flexibility, working remote or hybrid. None of this is surprising. So that would suggest, though, that it can be easier to find another job than it is to get a raise or ask for a raise. And so to me, if we can agree on the objective, which is to make more money, then I think, to your point, that strategy of working two, and dare I say, or more remote jobs is a solid one, especially now. If you can land it and get it and still get the job done, why not? Where else in your life or in history would you have even imagined to have tripled or doubled your salary while working at home? Like, these are the times that we're living in. And I would imagine there's someone listening to this right now saying, you know what? Like, this is probably the time to rethink it all.
Yes.
See what's available out there and do what you can to bring more income into your household.
Yeah. And again, to not think about it as zero sum. If you go out there and you apply for a new gig, it's remote, maybe you shoot for the stars and it's more ambitious than your current job.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to resign from the current job. Just take on the new job, keep the current one in the background. And then maybe after 3 months, after you've got five figures saved up because you're not spending one of those paychecks, you can let it go. But like, it's a really easy way, and I'm using air quotes, and obviously we made the disclaimer at the beginning that these are broad statements and don't apply to every industry or every person, but it feels like a nice way to kind of get caught up. It's not something that you have to do forever, even for a year. It might just be, you know, a couple months and pay off your car and then you quit the job you like the least. It's like speed dating.
I think I figured out why I like this phenomenon so much is because it widens the definition, if you will, or changes the definition of job as we've known it.
Yes.
And it sort of makes job transform into the other three-letter word, gig.
Yes.
Right? And so it's less about a job, which most people sort of attach a sense of loyalty and identity to. And it makes you think about, actually, no, your job is a gig.
Mm-hmm.
Now that you've got a fewer of these restrictions, it's a gig. And I can have multiple gigs.
Yeah.
And it's totally fine. So long as the other person is happy or the organization is happy, they're getting what they need, I'm getting what I need. It's a win-win for everyone. And so I hope if you're listening to this, you're thinking about this, you are hopefully maybe even readjusting your entire thought process around earning and jobs and certainly earning potential.
Yes. When I think about why somebody wouldn't do this or why I sometimes hesitate to take radical steps to improve my financial livelihood, fear is the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm afraid of the rejection, which, you know, if you take like this meta approach, could be looked at as afraid of competition because ultimately I'm afraid that somebody else will get what I want. But I think there's also this deeper, more internalized fear that a lot of people struggle with. And that's the fear of like outshining or leaving behind the people that they rock with, you know? like you said earlier, in a lot of our minds, competition is a zero-sum game, meaning if I win, then I inherently took something from someone else, or that it's comparative in the sense that other people will think I'm better than another person because I got this thing and they didn't.
Yes, yes. I call this success guilt, but the technical term is survivor syndrome or survivor's guilt. And the idea is that you're hesitant to do more or earn more because you believe doing so will further distance you from your family or your community or, let's say, a cohort. Mm-hmm. And you're essentially prioritizing your relationship with those people over the potential to earn more. Mm-hmm. And I've experienced and struggled with this for a long time, even today. And it's mostly in relation to like childhood friendships and relationships I had as a young adult. And I just always struggled with how well I was doing relative to my peers because we came from the same place and we were there at the same time. Mm-hmm. And we, at least on paper, had the same opportunities. And so I've struggled with seeing myself or experiencing this rise, knowing that many of them simply just didn't. And that's obviously not for everyone, but I think certainly for the people that I believe were just as dedicated to their careers or worked just as hard, they just simply weren't rewarded financially for their efforts. And I'll say in recent years, it's actually gotten a little worse, particularly now that I'm in the 40 club, because you can see that those same people, they have children. And so you can see how that fear has sort of manifested itself and how it has had an impact on their ability to raise their children now. The types of opportunities that they can afford to offer their children are now limited because they just don't earn enough money. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's like it's really, really challenging. And it's not to suggest that these people are not here because they were just afraid. Like I'm not here to, you know, sort of.
There are many things.
There are several factors, but I think that fear adds to the pylon.
Yeah. Even as a competitive person, I struggle with that fear sometimes too. And I can tell you firsthand that that mentality will keep you under earning in this environment. Yeah. Like there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So I want to bring us back to the original question, but first let's take a quick break and then we'll get back to the original question of what your fear or your hesitance is actually costing you. Okay, so going back to the question about what it's costing you, I think that the fear of competition is costing people their peace.
Okay.
Because this might be a hot take, but I believe in it. I secretly feel like the root of almost every financial question that we get comes from that person feeling some degree of competition.
Okay.
People will look at what somebody else got and they want it, or they think they should be doing something that they're not currently doing, or they don't feel like they're enough. They don't label it as competition, but in my mind, that's what it is. And it causes so much confusion and it creates this perpetual feeling of being stuck. Mm. Because you don't know what to call it, but it's this comparative, competing nature that causes it. And I think it's human nature to compete over what we value. And if you don't feel like you're competitive, then maybe it could just be that you don't know what you value or you're removed from it. You've told yourself you don't value money, and so you call yourself not competitive. Or you told yourself you don't value prestige, and so now you're not competitive about things that involve prestige.
Oh, gosh. I have like 10 people in my mind right now that I'm envisioning that I think embody what you just said. I think that's interesting. And it makes a lot of sense because I think competition conceptually is something that like lives both inside and outside of us. So there's our inner sense of competitiveness and there's how you bring that to the marketplace or competition as you're competing with others. And you know, there's no way to like measure it other than like when the competition is over. So I can see why it's so confusing for people and why they just kind of continue to kind of sit there in that sense of being stuck.
Mm-hmm.
So it ultimately just feels like the norm after a while.
Yep.
Like if you tell someone that they're not competitive enough or that they're too competitive, it's really like all subjective. So
yes.
I can see why it can be so confusing and people may not necessarily feel like there's any real cost associated to this because that could just be very easily written off as your opinion. But even if you got feedback from a hiring manager, like sort of turning this on his head, like if you got feedback from a hiring manager that you were like a bit aggressive just now, there's a chance that someone else might think that that behavior was exactly what they're looking for.
Yes.
And they're ready to bring you on right now. And
yes.
So I think that's part of the reason why, like, you know, I know we're not asking, I mean, we're talking about competition, but like the idea of like whether or not competitive people earn more money is such a confusing
yes.
concept and a difficult question because, well, how competitive should you be?
Right.
Right? Like, what's the right amount of competitiveness?
Yes.
When's the right time to employ that competitiveness? And it's really, really, it's a difficult nut to crack.
Yes. And it's not like there's going to be some sign from the universe that like, ding, you've hit the right level of competitiveness other than the results that you get.
Yeah.
So this brings me to my next point because you brought up this question of identity. I think mm-hmm. you said something like, what effect is your commitment to your claimed identity having on your income potential? And I think that it costs you your ability to see opportunities simply because you've labeled yourself uncompetitive, non-competitive,
mm-hmm.
as if it's some kind of fixed identity. So you don't even try anymore, right? You don't
put your name in the hat. The spot here. Are there particular professions in mind that you are thinking of when you, and when I say professions, I mean people who work in certain professions or industries, if you will, that sort of fall into that category?
Yes, lawyers.
What?
Lawyers think that the only thing they can do is practice law. It's a claimed identity. It doesn't matter that that same skill set might be good in coding, in diversity and inclusion, in training and onboarding. It's like, nope, I went through the hell of law school. And so...
yes.
I've got to stick
it's
to
the
it.
Sunk cost fallacy.
Yeah. And it's like, even at the salary level, there are salaries in other industries, whether it's tech or HVAC or, you know, becoming a content creator. There are salaries that are on par with what lawyers make, especially now, the newer ones coming out of law school, and they still won't even consider it. It's not even a money thing. It's the identity of being a lawyer. Sorry
yeah.
to the lawyers out there. The attorneys. Love
yeah.
y'all.
That's a really interesting way of looking at it. I would have bet you would have said teachers.
Oh, teachers are similar.
Yeah.
I feel like teachers, though, have made a lot of headway since the pandemic. Like,
yes.
I feel like a lot of them have recognized that there are lots of ways to teach outside of a traditional classroom setting.
Yeah, yeah. That was the first group of people that came to mind. These are people that wear their hearts on their sleeve.
Yeah.
They're thinking about the end results. They sort of accept the fact that I'm not going to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
And they buy into that for their entire careers. But at the same time, underneath it all,
mm-hmm.
they are competitive, right? It's not to
yeah.
say that they lack a sense of competition because they want to win the awards and get the accolades and they want to progress in their careers and one day become principals or I don't know what it's called, commissioners and administrators, et cetera. I know nothing about academia other than the conversations that I've had with people about money in this respect. But anyway,
Yeah. I mean, it's the same with people who label themselves bad with money. And I can say
yes.
this because I used to do it too. I used to call myself bad with money. And I had to learn that just because I'm not great with money right now doesn't mean that I can't or won't ever be great with money. And the same is true for competition. Just because you're not competitive in every situation, like with your friend groups or in like the dating game, it doesn't mean that you can't learn to be competitive in certain situations like the war on talent. Is that a thing? The talent pool or
oh,
the
yeah.
job market to make sure that your income is healthy. I just think that the context for your competition matters.
Yes, I completely agree. And I think, you know, it's making me think about people who may not necessarily have been competitive at one company
right.
or in one organization. But in another part of an organization or another company or even another industry, you might be exactly what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe however you measure your sense of competition, you know, to the point where it's not breaking you inside, maybe that's probably the right amount that you need to sort of carry and internalize. But you can't be that person comfortably in this organization or on that team.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So do you think we answered the question?
Of course. What? I mean, if we didn't, our listeners will certainly let us know. LaSalle.
Okay. Let's go with that. I think we definitely covered the subject, but you know, we can move on to final thoughts anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe there'll be a more definitive conclusion
in the final thoughts.
In your final thoughts.
Nope. So my final thought is to try not to villainize or add this moral judgment to the word competitive. Studies have shown that athletes actually do better in the workplace. And you would think that it's because they're hyper-competitive or cutthroat, but it's more about what they learned from competing at a high level all those years. They learned leadership, working as a team, practice, discipline, failure. So basically, there are just a lot of lessons that you can learn from simply showing up and being willing to compete. So do that.
I love that. I want to be super specific here. So I'm going to speak directly to the people who are turned off by competitiveness as a whole. And I would say to think about all the good that's actually come in the world from competition. And so without it, the cost of everyday goods would be higher. Businesses like wouldn't exist. Bad players wouldn't be overtaken by better players that are better equipped to solve problems. Those are all things that competition has actually helped to limit or eradicate. The same can be true with your earning potential. Many of you are probably already smart enough. You don't need to earn another credential. Mm-hmm. You work hard enough and you have the network. You just need to earn more, but you lack the edge or drive, and that comes from your inner competitive spirit. So don't let your fear of losing or how you'll be perceived get in the way of you potentially earning more.
I love that. So encouraging from a young Brooklynite.
You know, I try.
Every once in a while, we get the rose from the concrete of encouragement.
We'll see.
Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. We are having a 5-star competition. So if you want to win, head on over to the ratings and review page and leave us a 5-star rating and review. We'll see y'all next week.